Welcome to the Activation Phase. We have a World Cup special episode today. I am joined by longtime friend of the show, Hamza.
Hello.
Say hello. Nice. And traditional co-host, Tim.
Hey, super excited to be here with us again, as we have been many times.
Yeah, so the largest saga event ever has just taken place.
Yeah.
I didn't actually look up the numbers, but just assuming it was.
let's just pretend it was. It was 64 players, 16 teams, I think 11 nations. It was pretty cool.
Big numbers, huge. So we had you two guys attended. I could not attend, unfortunately, but that's fine. I'm here to learn, listen, enjoy the stories from the World Cup. So this one was a team tournament, so it's a little bit more complicated. Do you want to explain, Tim, what it meant and why it was special?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So we had just 16 slots for signups for teams. So per team, there were four players. So that means 64 players in total. And signing up as a team meant the following, that you played the rounds team by team. So it's always, you know, Germany into Sweden and not just Tim into Hamza. And there were some additional games to be played in these because of it being a team event. For example, the terrain was limited per team. So the whole team had to use the same pool of terrain. And if it was used up, then that happened. You can't use any more terrain. And then also the different scenarios that were played each round were also picked in a chess type situation where one team gets to pick a scenario at an age and then the other team gets to pick a scenario at an age. There was some metagaming stuff to make sure the whole thing also felt like a team event. And I think that worked out perfectly and was tons of fun to always feel like maybe right now my job is not supposed to win this game. I have a terrible matchup because my opponents picked that matchup for me, and it's perfectly fine for my team if I get out a draw. And that just felt so cool to be like in this, to be in this elaborate situation and team event. That was, I think it was super cool. How did you experience that, Hamza?
It was pretty good.
Perfect. Great. Perfect. All right.
Yeah. All right. So that's, I'm not sure if you said it, but there were essentially four different, eras being played. So,
yes.
Ancients, Vikings, Crusades, and Invasions.
Yeah.
Should we talk about some of the choices going into which warband to choose? Because I do see a pattern for some of these ages.
Yeah. So as every team had to provide one warband from Ancients, Invasions, Vikings, and Crusades, and it was clear from the beginning what the amount of terrain is that each team gets. You basically tried to find a team composition of factions throughout the ages that some of them need terrain, some of them don't need terrain, and some of them don't really care if they have terrain or not. And so the whole setup was very, like, it was supposed to be very thought out from the beginning to make sure that you pick the right factions to help your team. So I think Huns and Picts were a very popular pick because Picts need lots of terrain, and that's just clear, and Huns don't need terrain, and that's just clear. And then, for example, Goths, they don't really care if there's lots of terrain. Like, they can do both. And I think very versatile factions ended up being in this tournament a lot, like Crusaders, like Goths, like Persians, for example. And because they just filled those slots of, it's not super sure how much terrain will be left over, and they can provide a good game either with or without it. Terrain was just super important, yeah.
I feel that for us, I was playing for Team Sweden, and for us, the terrain was not the issue. The issue was getting people to play factions they were good at that aren't like mainline factions. That's not, okay, everybody knows this. everybody else plays against it's more like take something that you're good with, but it's not like a top tier faction because we wanted to surprise our opponent.
Yeah, and then you picked Huns.
Yeah, but well, Your Honor, for the record, we had a player drop out a month before. I was scheduled to play Saracens. So I had been practicing Saracens a lot, and a month before we had a drop. So we were really lucky to get Tristan from Germany to play in our team, and he is really good with the Spanish. So we wanted him to play Crusades. And then I had to rearrange my Saracen army into Huns. And then we also picked Macedonians for Age of Alex from Alexander. The reason we did that was the guy who played him is also named Alexander. So that's not the only reason. The reason was nobody of us actually plays Ancients here. So he was going in blind basically, and he picked something he thought was cool. He thought the Battle Bowl was good, but he had not so much experience with the others in that age. And then we picked Scots for Frederick, who has been playing Age of Vikings for a long time with them, and he's very good with them. So that was how we picked. We didn't really check so much for the terrain, especially once the amount of terrain increased. Like there was first like two hardcover and one hill, and then it got to be like three hardcover and two hills. So then we were like, okay, we should be able to manage this.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's of course a very fortunate situation with my German team that I played for, where all four of us have like every age, of course, and then we had lots of opportunities to look through every round and see what like all four scenarios and see, okay, we need a faction that can be fast. We need a faction that can be very defensive. Like in my team personally, that was Team Germany Red. Lots of thought by my team captain Simon went into what factions we should bring and how that's gonna affect our rounds. And I think it probably paid off throughout the whole tournament.
But what were you guys thinking of? Like what was the What? How did you analyze it? Like, what were you looking at?
Right. So, if there's a bunch of scenarios that in one round that all need you to be like to defend something or to be resilient, then it would have been not great to have like two or three factions in there that are just like fast and deadly, like the Huns, or like the, I don't know, like. Another aggressive faction from another age, like the Thracians or whatever. And so we checked to have like four different factions that need different terrain and that also are good at different wind conditions. Like, you know, of course, that are some like the Persians were incredibly tanky, and they whenever it was someone was like a scenario was in there in the pool of the games. That needed a bridge to be held, we put the Persians on there, or the Crusaders, because that's just what they can do, and not the Huns. And I mean, yeah, that's what we did, I think.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Maybe Hamza, you've explained your choice of team members and what they played. Tim, did you say what you brought as a team?
Maybe I can definitely say it. Like, we as a team brought my ancient players and team captain for Team Germany Red. Simon brought Persians, the medium Persians, and he performed with them. He was great with them. I played invasions and I played Huns, of course. Like, that is what I do. And then Mirko, the guy that organized the whole thing from Stronghold Terrain, he was our Vikings player, and he had the Pagan Rus, which are incredibly tough to play in, of course. And then our the resident Belgian/Dutch destroyer Timo was our Crusades player, and he played the Gatling Gun Crusaders with tons of levies that just shoot, and warriors, I think, that just shoot insane amounts of shots each turn without ever really slowing down. And so that was our setup. We had a very tanky faction with the Persians that can be aggressive, like that's so super versatile. We had the Huns, an aggressive faction on horse. We had the Rus that basically fucks any horse faction in Vikings. And then the Crusaders who play really well into the mounted factions that are in Crusades and also into the foot factions. So yeah, that was our setup.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. I guess the Pagan Rus as well. If you need to have a draw, you could definitely have a draw very easily.
That is absolutely correct. And I think Mirko ended up taking two draws just because, yeah, sometimes it's just what happens. Maybe just one draw and four wins. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Also, we have an interview with Mirko a few months back. So
yeah,
have a look at that. All around good guy. So
great guy, yeah.
Do you want to walk us through how the match up gets determined and how the terrain gets allocated and these scenarios, just so people who haven't attended and maybe want to run something similar want to get an idea of what the choices are going into each round?
Yeah. Yeah, do you, Hamza? I'll just start, and you add if that's okay with you, because I'm sure I'll forget something. Okay. So for the scenarios, there was a table of scenarios, like 10 scenarios total, maybe, that were all like two or three custom scenarios in there, and then like for the other 7 Book of Battle scenarios, they were all modified to play better, and I think that worked out great. And then yeah, that was a table. It was five rounds of four games each, makes 20 scenarios needed, or 20 games basically. And so 10 scenarios were put in about twice each into those five rounds. And it was just a table. So that said, in round one, these four scenarios have to be picked on the different ages. And then round two, it's going to be these four scenarios. And they were mixed. And they, as I said, some of them ended up being in this table twice, and that was fine. And so you had, right from even before the tournament started, you knew, okay, in one round, in round one, one of us will have to play, in my case, for example, one of us has to play ambush. And so yeah, that's how that worked. Do you agree, Hamza?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and then for the terrain, it was just, as Hamza said, that was just a list of terrain that we had, that every team had available for every round, and then you just used that terrain, adhering to the saga rules for not putting two rocky grounds, for example, on the battlefield, and it was just so that like each team had their own pool of terrain where no other team could interfere, which no other team could interfere with. And so it was very reliable to always have for me, example, as the Hunt player, it was very reliable for me to always have the open hill. And it was very reliable for the Crusades player, for example, to always have the ruins or whatever.
Yeah, but I guess it makes some interesting choices as well. You don't always get what you want.
Yeah, did that end up happening to you, Hamza? Did like the terrain run out and you guys didn't have what you wanted in one of the games?
I think the steep hill was hot currency. Everybody wanted it to mess with the opponent's deployment, and we only had one. So each round we went to, and that was the thing we discussed, like who's taking the large forest and who's taking the big hill,
Steep hill.
Yeah, so a cool thing about this was like there were like a row of tables next to each other, and between like each table was the terrain pool, basically. So they built a large number of terrain pieces, and they were very high quality, and that was very really cool to play on. That there was no mats or anything like that, so the work put in by the organizers was top notch, actually.
Yeah, that was probably the best terrain, like the best mix between being like very, very playable and also incredibly beautiful.
Yeah, it was very good. And also the, like the quantity of it and the standard was very high. Like for like what, 60, 30 tables or something of Saga, that's It's very good. I enjoy that a lot. And I
the
was worried about
standard?
like that there would be a lots of running back and forth, like somebody took the ruin, then oh no, I can't put the ruin. But since the terrain was like close by to everyone, it wasn't that hard. It was well organized. There was no like running to some place to get it and then back to the table that could have, because every game was on time. So you had to play quickly, basically. You couldn't spend too much time or, you know, were fucking around. So it was good.
It was
And I guess it was a standard, really beautiful Mirko terrain, right? That he uses for all of his tournaments.
Yeah,
that's kind of the dream.
It is
dream terrain, basically.
Yeah, but also like the rivers, the bridge. I mean, that's very specialized, right? That's not. You don't see that a lot, like having a tournament
with this, right? Yeah,
that's really, really cool.
Yeah, that's some serious commitment as well, because like I think for like a 16 person tournament, like I would never run the river or the anything with the bridges. It's just, I'm not gonna make eight rivers.
that's very weak of you.
I know. Need to we can only aspire to be a fraction as great as Mirko. But I would suggest everyone goes to Mirko's Facebook page, like the Stronghold Terrain Facebook, and he's kind of put like his little journey of building all the terrain pieces and just like loads of pictures of the finished terrain as well. I can only imagine how much work he went into that. It's just absolutely insane amount of work and dedication to get this off the ground.
I talked to him about it, and he said he was like done. He felt like he was done for a good amount of time before he was actually done, because it was just a motherload of terrain that needed to be built, and he wanted it to be great. So yeah.
Okay. Should we go into the selection of our armies, Tim, and then how we can start? Maybe go through the first game.
Absolutely, yeah.
I can start. So I was going to play Hans because I thought that, okay, I played my, because I built an army of basically August Turks for the Crusades. And I thought like, well, you can play Steppe People with the Hun board, and let you say I'm playing the Hun board now. So even though it's not historical and it hurts a bit, I was able to lie to myself enough to do it. And I played the Steppe People in the Polish Grand Melee. That was in October. Yeah, a month ago or something. I can't. Dates are floating right now in my head. And the Steppe People don't have they have Javelin Levy, which I thought were good, but turns out that Javelin Levy are not so durable. So people would crash into them and explode them and fatigue everything, and I was like, this sucks. Why? So I took those out and took in some the Huns can have actual melee levy, the spearmen, and I thought like I'm gonna use them as a mobile cover for my army or take objectives with them, because they are surprisingly hard to kill. So I went with 5 points of warriors. I've tried the Hurt Guard. But the problem with the Herd Guard, in my opinion, is they're good for one fight. After one fight and they pick up a fatigue, they're basically spent. And then your opponent can like destroy them, and then he gets like a lot of victory points and so on. So I went like, okay, I'm going to have warriors. So I took 5 points of warriors and 1 point of levy. What did you do, Tim? How did you go into building your arm?
Right. As is on theme, I guess, my thoughts about the whole thing were less defensive, and I just thought, okay, the Hearthguard, they don't generate that many attack dice anymore when charging with weak spot, so that's the one with the bonus attack dice, and that's what they were like before. My playstyle with the Huns was like, just pick out one specific key unit in my opponent's army that will make an impact if it dies, and fatigue it, like exhaust it, and then have the Hearthguard charge in there, and also charge in with weak spots. So the four Hearthguard go up to from 8 to go up to 16, and then through Wolf of Step to 21, and then take the fatigue so they can't hit me anymore. and I'm because they're exhausted. And now, and then that went away. And so I thought, okay, can't do that anymore. Not enough attack dice. And so I'll just switch to warriors, and the whole scenario and taking care of like the wagons in ambush or whatever. I threw all of that onto the guides, and they did manage well, and that they did manage that well, and took out some wagons throughout the games, and also obviously always took away the solid cover my opponents tried to sneak into their opponents.
Ooh, yeah, very so, good, Tim.
Yeah, so yeah, 5 points of warriors, 1 point of guides, because that's the most aggressive build for the Huns, I think, and it works fine.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get a very Hun-centric view of the World Cup right now.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
But I think that Huns, again, like building an army of them, you still need a lot of mounted guys, and they're still armor 3. So, I mean, if you're not careful, you can lose a lot of models in one turn.
And I did.
So it's not. Yeah, me too. So they are pretty good, but they have weaknesses. Minor, but still. Anyway, I'm going to go into my game as Team Sweden's game 1. So, like I said, we had Macedonians, Scots, Spanish, and me playing the Huns. We faced France 2, I think. I got to play the Frozen River, a scenario I have not played before the World Cup. Tells you a little bit about my preparation level. And I got to play Picts, which can teleport. So they can easily get to the other side. And the scenario goes out. The main task in the scenario is to get to the other side. Every figure you get over, you get points for. So killing the opponent is basically useless. So my opponent had Picts. They also had Persians, Achaemenid Persians. They had Carolinians. I don't remember what they had in the crew. I think they had, let me see here, France too. I think they also had Spanish. Interesting. So they were playing into Tristan, who is the guy playing Spanish. He's so good with them. It's so good to have a player like him, because he plays a faction that they're a bit too par. You can't like win big tournaments with them, but he's so good at them that when you're only playing Crusades, suddenly that becomes a huge multiplier that you know your faction so well, and it's not like deemed like a strong faction. They're good, but they're not like the best. So yeah. I played a Frozen River. We basically fought each other. My opponent made some mistakes with his movement. He did not use the teleport ability so much. And I was able to just short about his army. He had like 6 hurt guards. Bow, of course. And so I think the rest was warriors. But he came at me a little. I always had the what's it, the one called where you hand out fatigue when the opponent is within a, what's it called? You know that ability.
Death comes from above.
No, the one when they in the activation reaction.
Oh, panic.
Panic. Yeah, that was so good in this game because I had a rare on it that I got to use once, and that turned into like, oh, I gave him a fatigue, he gave myself defense die. Suddenly, he didn't do so much damage to me. My levy blocked one of his access points to the other side and fought a little, beat up a bunch of hurt garden warriors. So that was good, and in basically the end. And I was able to punch through one of the sides, ride through. I had killed a lot of his models that made it to my side and was basically safe. So that was a victory for Sweden, or for me. And I think also we won all the other games as well. I think that there was a draw with the Persians versus our Macedonians. But otherwise, we started off with 3 victories and a draw, I think.
Nice. That well, that's good. Pretty good results as well against the Persians with the Macedonians. So,
yeah, I think I don't remember the scenario. Maybe it was with ground, which I think Macedonians are actually stronger than Persians in. But I saw that he had a lot of camels, and those are good in terrain. So maybe it wasn't that easy. So yeah, that was. I think that was a hard fought for our Macedonians. Player the Franks in the French were playing the Franks, of course. And unfortunately, they played into our Scott player, who has played so much against the Franks. So he knew exactly what to do. And that was basically in turn two. So good. We start off. How was your game, Tim?
Right. Yeah, so we played our first game into Portugal, our first round. And I ended up playing into Goths, the mounted ones. And I always forget which ones those are. And then Florian from Germany always gets mad at me because I say the wrong thing. So yeah, the mounted ones, Ostrogoths maybe? I think so. And my opponent had 3 points of Hearthguard, 3 points of Warriors. And we played Ambush. And then, yeah, first, it was a pretty good setup for me terrain-wise. That was perfectly fine. But turn one, I absolutely forgot that the mounted Goths are a menace and just can rush into me when I don't have any dice on my board already, because that's how Ambush works. In their second turn, they get all their dice and I don't have any. And yeah, so he charged into me. Pardon?
Oh, no, Tid.
Yeah. Yeah, so turn two, he charged into me with his fully loaded board, and he rolled four rares on seven dice in the first turn.
Pro move right there.
So he had everything, and he charged in, and basically didn't lose anything. Like his 3 points of Hearthguard fully came at me and took out like 20 warriors or whatever out of the 440 warriors that I had, and with losing like two guys. I think on his side. So that was a devastating turn. And then I ended up playing the whole game with five dice instead of seven dice. And yeah, my second turn still ended up, I didn't get a rare to do the nice charges, but my second turn still ended up wiping those remaining 10 Hearthguard because Huns are broken. And like I have tons of
you
shots into
10 Hearthguard.
Yeah, with like the small remaining part of my army, yeah. And it was cataphract Hearthguard on horses.
Damn.
Yeah, that was brutal because that was on theme. Like it wasn't crazy rolls or whatever, he didn't fuck up his saves. It was just tons of attacks coming at him and then all of his stuff being exhausted didn't. I mean, of course, the Huns love it, and if I can charge two or three times without really sacrificing anything, because my small units, I just charge them in, and they, with all the weak spot and everything that I didn't have, so I guess all the charges were enough. That's what happened, and then, of course, I lost 20 warriors, which is like 2.5 points. He had lost, and at that point, I probably lost like five warriors more. And then, yeah, we basically, he traded his very aggressive mobile 3 points of Hearthguard into my just half of my mobile faction of warriors, and so I had half of my warriors left and the guides left and my warlord left, and so the game started to turn around, and then in the end I think that was a overwhelming victory for Team Germany for me in Ambush, and that was a great game.
Nice. I did not actually expect this ending. It sounded pretty dire at the
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
like, one.
Timo standing next to me was like, shit, yeah, that happened. Yeah. Oh, no, it wasn't an overwhelming victory. It was a normal victory. I take that back. Yeah, yeah. It was a great game. Hugo was just, the Portuguese guy was an absolute pleasure to play into because, he didn't mind his Hearthguard dying. And so I didn't feel too bad. And we had lots of fun. And they said that after that they will never listen to the Activation Phase podcast again, which they did on the way over, and that was a bit sad, but I guess that is the price I had to pay. Yeah, good game.
Nice. So, what were the other teams doing around in round one? Does anyone have the results to hand?
The other teams.
Bro, come on.
No, I definitely don't.
What am I, a calculator or something? I have a computer in my head. I don't know.
I have it. Okay, so do you want the ranking after turn one or what?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe just the top three.
Yeah, yeah. Right, so after the first round, The biggest victories were on Team Germany Red into Portugal, on France 1 into Belgium 1, and then England into Austria. Yeah.
Come on, England. Come on, some
goals. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that was great.
All right. Let's move on to round two. What's happening? You start off, Hamza.
Yeah, sure. So we got to play England. Mm-hmm. Yay! and they had, they were generally very nice guys to play with. They had a very good, I mean, when you play like into different teams, you see like a bit of their gaming culture. And I think the British are, in my opinion, the most proper one. They are very generous to their opponents, even if it's like an important thing that's going to decide the game. They're like, this is fine. You can, I forgot to shoot the problem. They always say, are you done with your orders phase, to remind you to use orders abilities and so on. So it's like watching someone who eats and he has like proper etiquette. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, that's how you cut the meat with this type of, you know, they were very, we really appreciated that. So they had Andy, who played Welsh. They had Jed, who played Carthaginians. Jed was a mercenary in the Swedish team, the last World Cup. He didn't do very well that time. I think he lost all his games. Now he has improved. So yeah, Team Sweden, he learned to crawl with us. Now he can run with the England, you know. So he played Carthaginians. There was, I think, Richard was playing Picts, and there's a Pict team at this tournament, but we'll get into that later. And Crusades was Mark, who played Saracens, a very interesting army with 5 points of warriors and 12 levy, which is not something, I play Saracens a lot, and that's not something I've seen or would consider very good, but he is a really strong player, and yeah. So I get to play the Picts. I got to play not Sacred Ground, what's it called? Feasting and Pillaging.
Mm.
And I have a thing I do in this scenario, which is I try to have small units that are the banner that are going to take that one objective on the sides really quickly. And the plan is then to force my opponent to attack them, but I also have other things that can move into support. And Richard deployed his army like in big deserters. He had two units of 10 warriors, one with the banner, and the levy and 6 hard guard. So we fought on one of the sides. He sent his Romans to take one of the objectives. I attacked them. I beat them up quite hard. I exhausted them first, and then they lost their special rule, and I was able to shoot them off. I had some luck in the shooting. I think my combat didn't go so well, and then shot him like times. I killed the remaining like 3 of his models, which was a bit of a bummer. And that was also like a theme that we started to fight on one flank. I shot at him. I killed way more than I should have. Like, shot 2 shots at Herkard or 3, killed 2. We fight in melee. I killed some more than I should have. And basically, one of his flanks collapsed because he did not have. He had to basically send in his strong units to take the objectives. And I think the dice were a bit on my side in some of the shooting. So that was a victory for me. We also, Frederick Scots got to play Andy's Welsh, which I can't remember the scenario, but I think we all agree that like Frederick was going to be smoked, like mounted Welsh against Scots. Like, but he didn't. He didn't get smoked. He actually won it.
Damn, that's impressive.
a few good saves, but he's pretty tricky player, Frederick. He can see things and do unexpected things, like charge really far with his warlord. That's something you shouldn't do, but sometimes it pays off. And I think that was one of those games, and Andy was a bit unlucky with the shooting. Jed played our Macedonian player with his Carthaginians and basically wiped him out. He crushed him. He won like you know, full victory, 6 points, whatever. Really good, good for him. Thank you, Jed. And Tristan played the Saracens, and he also lost that game, which is not something I expected. But yeah, that was so. Overall, we played. We had both two wins and two losses, but they had one more massive, like one more outstanding victory. So they get away with 1 point more than us. So that was our game against Team England. And again, really nice guys to play with, really generous, and I really enjoy playing against them always.
Yeah, right. That sounds like a good game. And spoiler alert, we also played into Team England, and it was, in fact, a great experience. All right. Round two for us was Team Germany Red into France 1. And I played into Romans, the Age of Invasion Romans. And we played challenges, so that was interesting, because for the first time ever, I decided to do the non-hunt thing and pick all the challenges where my stuff needs to survive, because I saw my opponent had like levies and warriors, and he was just a Gatling gun that didn't really want to move, and he had the mana ballista and everything, so he had 2.5 points of warriors and 3.5 points of levies, if I remember correctly. And so I picked all the challenges that say, yeah, don't lose half of your models and don't lose more than one unit. And my opponent picked First Blood. He picked the one where he said that I can't kill a single model in a turn that he picks. And I think he had the one that where his world needs to survive or whatever. So he had three challenges and I had two. And so it was looking
just
like
a
I
question.
Would not... Please.
Yeah, I can go through it, but what do you think of his pick of challenges? Was he making a mistake, or was he doing it good?
No, I think he expected me to be very aggressive, maybe mm-hmm. because that is what I do. And I think then his challenge would have been perfect, because me being very aggressive makes it. It was very easy for him to keep his wallet safe in a big mm-hmm. forest and whatever. So that was a great pick, but it's always. It always hurts to lose that Saga Die on when you pick the. I'll keep my world.
Yeah, yeah.
And the First Blood one, that was very easy for him to do as well with the Mana Ballista and him going first. Like, that was. I can't hide everything, because he will put down half of his army, then I will put down my full army, and then he will put down the other half of his army. So that was a great pick, I think. Well done. And then the one where it says that he can have his whole army not take a single casualty in a turn, I think that was. That's what won me the game, right? Because I think it's absolutely impossible to do that into Huns. Because if I really want to, I'll absolutely sacrifice one of my 10 5-man warrior units to make sure that I will take out a model. And that is exactly what happened. He shot at me because I couldn't hide my full army turn one behind two hills and a ruin, I think, or a forest, maybe. I don't remember. And I lost a single model, so that he got First Blood, and then it was still looking like I didn't have to do anything. I would just wait behind my hill until he comes out, because as soon as he says the magic word that this is his invincible turn, I will run in there and kill something. And that's exactly what happened. The whole game took like 40 minutes in total, because everything I did was put on, it's super cowardly, but it had to be done, put on defense dice. And he kept shooting at me, and I didn't lose any, like, lose much. And so the one turn he said, like, turn five, the last possible turn that is played for sure, because for the sixth one, you roll a die to see if it happens. The fifth turn, he said, okay, this is my invincible turn, and I ran in there, and I think even on the first shot, I murdered a model. And even though he had defense dice or whatever. So I could even back my guys back up and stay behind the hill again. And then so I think that choice screwed the game for him. And I felt ashamed to pick these defensive things, but when I could have picked the very aggressive things. But that was an overwhelming victory, because I got all my challenges done and he didn't. And I won by more than like 15 points or whatever. And it was a very fun game. I got to practice French a lot. He got to practice English, well, he spoke English well, but yeah. I'd absolutely play Into France again, and that was a fun game. And my teammates, two of them also won their games, and one of them lost. I'm not super sure who lost that game. But yeah, we ended up having 19 points into their 6 points because, yeah, it was a draw. Yeah, I think it was Mirko. Yeah, Mirko drew into the Vikings players. So it was 3 wins for us and a draw, and then the opponents had a draw and 3 losses. Good round, lots of points for us. The as you said, you played into England, and that kind of left you in the central area of the teams, and Poland Red got catapulted up by having 4 victories and an overwhelming victory, and Germany Black, one of our other teams, had 2 overwhelming victories and 4 victories in total. So they all got pushed all the way to the top, and that obviously decided who we played in round 3.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, we were like in the middle now, so we got to play, I think, Germany Gold.
Yes.
Which had, or yellow.
It's gold, please gold, yeah.
They had Goths, Anglo-Saxon, Successors, and Crusaders. And I know the Successor player, Moritz, I can't remember his first name. We played a bunch on TTS, and he's pretty good.
Yeah.
So I told Alex, like, this battle board is good, he is good, you have to be careful. So Alex is our Macedonian player. And I got to play Fabian in, what's it called? The Wrath of the Warlords, I think. The one where anything that dies to shooting has, what do you call it? It counts as levy. So obviously yes, they wanted the invasion's army to play that. But the thing is, Hans can fight in combat pretty well also. Yeah. So it's not a sure thing. They had the Anglo-Saxons versus Scott on the bridges, and I think that's a favorable... I mean, both can really hold it, but I think Anglo-Saxons have more bodies to push through with. They had an Anglo-Saxon army with, I think, 12 levies, and either the monks or the Gadgadil, I can't remember. So that was an army that was really strong, and we couldn't figure out what to do with it, so somebody has to jump on that grenade, and Frederick did with his Scots. Tristan got to play the Crusaders. I can't remember what scenario, but it's an army that it's a matchup that he's quite familiar with, so we had hopes for him. So yeah, I got to play the Goths in Wrath of the Warlords, and my opponent put down a lot of terrain in his quarter, which I think was maybe a mistake because I had to ride over there. But what he did was he put like basically all his infantry into the terrain, which meant that I saw that, and I moved up and started to do the, you know, when you put down like an L ruler and get everyone under their fatigue. So I was,
hell yeah,
handing out lots of fatigues to poor, to the poor Goths. They had 8 Hurt Guard, the Sailors, which was, in my opinion, odd choice of mercenary, and I didn't understand what they did. And also they're good against Huns because they get more attacks, but you have to get into combat, basically. And they had like a 6, a unit of 6 Bow Levy hiding far away, which against Huns, like, you're not safe anywhere on the table. So yeah, he sat there and tried to get out, but I basically was able to block his attacks with my abilities, throw fatigues on him, get loads and loads of defense dice. He got loads and loads of attack dice, but every combat he was like losing a little more than I did, and then I was like cleaning up that unit in my next turn. So basically the 2 big warrior units were lost rather quickly. His Hurt card came in, did a lot of damage, but I was basically on his side, having taken out lots of Saga dice, so he had a trouble remaining in the game. So that was a victory for me. I still think I'm not sure about having like foot go. I mean, a unit on foot is good against the Huns, so you can basically hide behind, like put him between terrain and put your army in the back. But having all foot is maybe difficult because you're going to get in with a lot of fatigue, and even if gods become stronger with fatigue, so do the Huns. So it's not an easy game. And also you need like lots of activations to get them there. Yeah, that was a victory for me. Tristan won massively against the Saracens. Oh, sorry, against the Crusaders. He won a big. Yeah. So he's our best player. We continue the Swedish tradition of hiring Germans to beat up other Germans.
Hell yeah.
It's pretty effective. So why stop doing it now? I think our Anglo-Saxon and our what's it called? The Scots. That game was a draw. And the successors lost because Alex said he had the most insane shooting in the saga game he's played, like basically the last year. He said it was like doing five hits on his hurt guard, all five die. And to just like keep going with these Sarissas, like beating up the poor successors, which shouldn't basically happen. Like successors are pretty good.
Yeah, they are.
And the opponent wasn't playing bad either, so it was just like one of those games where the opponent's shooting is so much better and you can't do much about that. I think they play Sacred Ground or something. We got a lot of points in this game, so that catapulted us up a bit.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, I see. Because, yes. In round three, we played into Team Poland 1, I guess. Or I think they called themselves Team Poland Red when we were there.
Yeah.
I played into Picts. I played into Matthias. That would be the German pronunciation of his name, I think. And he was very nice. And we played Frozen River. And he had 1 point of Hearthguard on horses, 3.5 points of warriors, and 1.5 points of levies. And I think those were like 7 bow and 11 crossbow levies. And yeah, the Frozen River isn't super great for the Huns, but it also wasn't super bad for the Huns. He ended up having basically no terrain on his side because of my guides. And I ended up having lots of terrain on my side, which wasn't too close to the bridges. So I just kept a 4-man unit of warriors in one of the terrain pieces so that he can't teleport into there. And then, like, they weren't a horse and everything, but it doesn't. They have great, huge bases, so they can easily cover the whole, like, the whole area. And then, so he can't teleport in there. And then the guides were in the other piece of terrain to make sure that he can teleport into there. And then they obviously are fast enough to still cross the table in the last two turns. And then it ended up being I just poked him a bit, ran over the bridges, shot my shots, and then ran back in a way where even if he charged me, he would never be within 6 inches of my terrain pieces, and so his abilities are never fully charged up. And that was halfway through. He was like, "Tim, like honestly, are you like you've been smiling for like 1.5 hours? Are you okay? Like, are you mocking me?" I was like, "No, dude, this is just." This is who I am. And then after that, like after having that conversation, everything was just incredibly funny. And we had lots of fun in that game because I think he understood that I didn't mean him any harm. And having fun in the game is just what I do with the Huns. I love playing them, and I love playing into new people. And so after that, we had we had a ton of fun in that game, and it ended up being... He ended up having to do something because he would have never. I was the second player, so I could have just, even if I just had gotten one unit over the river in the end, that would have been my game. And so he ended up having to do something, and he charged me with his 4 heart guard on horse and took out an insane amount of warriors without losing any of his. But as the Huns do, that didn't matter too much. Then they retaliated, and I ended up winning that game. But yeah, I had tons of fun in that game, and it was so funny to see someone be irritated by me, by me smiling. Yeah. But I guess I really appreciated him asking, like, are you mocking me, or are you just having fun? I was like, no, dude, this is just great. And then, love that game. And I think you also played into him at some point in later. On the other tables, my teammates, my Crusader player Timo, he played into Michał, the guy that won the Polish Grand Melee last year, and that is my personal hobby crush, because he's good at the game, he's nice, and his models are insane. His Militis Christi, and that was cool. And Timo ended up winning. I think it was close, but he ended up winning. And then Mirko also ended up winning with his Russ, and I'm not sure what faction he played into. I think Normans.
Yeah, Normans.
Yeah, and then Simon with his Persians played into Jan with his Republican Romans. And honestly, that guy is just too fucking good at the game. Like, he is really insane. I mean, dude, he played, like, I know this is a spoiler and everything, but he played 5 games with the Republican Romans on that tournament, and he always played into Alexander armies. And he didn't lose a single one. He played into Persians, he played into Macedonians, he played into all the factions that should easily destroy the Republican Romans. But his brain...
I think he played against Persian once, and it was in a scenario where they are not good. So if... yeah.
It is fine, but his brain is... And you can think what you want.
It's firing on all cylinders, I know. He's
he's
you know, you use player. Like 30% of your brain, he uses like 99% of his brain.
I would agree. Going in there with Republican Romans and taking the candy from all the Alexander players, I think that was a great move. And all in all, great team. So that is my new hobby crush now, the Jan Sava. And that was cool. Love that. And that was day one.
Yeah. So we went to this like medieval themed restaurant, and I got to be placed next to one of the Italian teams. Those guys were so funny. It was like watching the Romans soldiers going to Germania again, and it's like, this is not, what is this food? I have to take pictures to my wife. You cannot make tiramisu like this. Oh man, they ruled. I love them so much. They're so funny.
Was it the team with the insanely cool t-shirts?
Yeah. Well, I can't remember which Italian team that was, but they were they ruled. I think it was the
sub. It was Italia Sabauda, right?
Yeah, Sabauda. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They looked great. They had great style throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, they really cool guys. But seriously, rosemary in tiramisu? What the fuck? animals,
right?
But, I think that's also an important part of the whole tournament, right? Just like getting people together from
across that was great.
Europe, because I think you travel a lot, Hamza. I know some of the other Swedish guys travel a lot, but mostly I think we have a little group around, kind of like Germany, Ruhr area, Netherlands, Belgium, and then France does its own thing. Italy does its own thing.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen a Spanish or a Portuguese person come this far north either. So that sounds pretty cool that everyone kind of mixes up together, meets each other.
Yeah, that was really fun.
It was really fun.
Who were you guys sitting next to during that? Or were you by yourself doing tactics?
Yes, I ended up going home because I had to take care of some personal stuff. So I didn't end up going to the whole thing. That was unfortunate, but I had no time. Yeah.
All right.
All right. So,
day 2, game 4. So right now we're feeling good about ourselves in Team Sweden. We've been beating up a German team, and then we had to play another German team.
Hell yeah!
Germany Red. And, hell yeah! We discussed back and forth, like, what the fuck are we going to do? We wanted to have... The big challenges was, like, for me, Tim, I was going to... Because we both play Hans, and I think, even though what the results are what they are, I still think Tim is a better Hans player than me, based on, like, you have more experience with them. So the only way...
Kind words.
I thought, like, okay... But I do have an advantage in one of the scenarios, because I can have like two units of levy that can take objectives, and that was the feasting and pillaging. But that was also the only scenario we thought our Macedonian player could play against the Persians, played by Simon. And I played against Simon's army. It is brutal. It's fucking hard. It's a really tough army to beat. He has two 12 of mounted warriors, a 12 on foot, combined arms, and a 4 on foot, basically, hiding, generating side eyes, and the Cappadocian. So, so I told Alex, one of us is gonna... I mean, he thought, even if I play Feasting and Pillaging, I might lose, so... We took Hans, so me and Tim played. I can't remember what Alex and Simon ended up playing, which scenario. And the Russ and the Scots were playing, which we thought was a fair matchup. Both should be able to win. There's no inherent superiority. We didn't want... for some reason, you guys were... you were higher ranked up, so I think this was the only game where we picked the first scenario.
Yeah.
So we picked us to play because we were afraid that the Spanish were gonna play feasting and pillaging, and Tristan said that's not a good scenario for him.
Yeah.
Against Timo, so they played the Battle of Heroes, and the terrain got really favorable for the Spanish. So we'll get to the results of that game in a minute. So me and Tim got to play. And I think you gave up 3 points. You beat the 3 points to make me start, which was, I think, all right. I put my levy up in the front, and I knew that I was going to take the rightmost objective, but then I was just hesitating. No, sorry, the leftmost objective with one of my levy units, and then on the... Right, I was a bit hesitating what to do. Should I take the one in the swamp or the one in the far out? And I think that caused me a little problems down the line, not just picking one and sticking to it. And I rolled a lot of rares, so I could have a really strong defense for the levy. No matter what you did, I was going to basically weather it. I had lots of attacks. So going into my levy was not really great for you, and... I got to the objectives, started to move back. You didn't get the combos, basically. You didn't get the quiver, horse, which is the fuck you die now. So you never got it, right?
I didn't.
And that cost you the game.
I agree, yeah.
You tried to attack me, I counterattacked. We both killed stuff, but... In the end, you got one of the objectives, but it didn't matter. I killed more stuff, and I walked out with one objective, and that was a win for me.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, you took the as you said, the leftmost objective. That was pretty safe. I couldn't really interfere with that. Seeing that you had three rares in the combat pool, and you levies can close ranks.
Yeah.
and you had the Barbarians of the East, so even if I did charge and you decided to just put all these dice into attack, I would have been screwed. So that was brutal. And then my guides took the middle objective and they kept that. That was all right. But I also had to allocate some resources to make sure that you don't just charge into the fucking swamp with your horses and take it from them.
Yeah, I think they were exhausted most of the game, basically, because I shot
panic. It's just panic and the death comes from above, always putting back fatigue on these motherfuckers. So it was a tough game. And then on your rightmost side, that objective, that was going okay. But then the one turn where you did something and it was my opportunity to just take the game from you, I ended up rolling a one sword and five quivers or whatever. And that just... wasn't enough to activate my warriors. And so that gave away that game, I would say. I tried to delay you some more so you can't run away with your levies. And of course, I had to get myself out of position. And it was, you made all the right decisions. And I couldn't quite catch up with that. And so I think that was a super cool game. And I enjoyed that.
You think so?
It was, yeah, of course, I think so. I mean, my brain was... As you said, and I think you, of course, this, we said this jokingly, but I I told this, I told this to my friends here. You were like, dude, Tim, right now, everybody around us, they're playing checkers. And we're playing chess right here. Huns into huns. This is what our brains are made for.
Yeah, because like any small mistake or any like critical moment of bad luck just throws the game so wildly in the other direction.
Yeah, every single fatigue being on the running.
Everything has to be measured. So like this is within a vis and stuff. So it was a really tough game. But
That was very funny to me. And with the Huns being so explosive, I think that's correct. I mean, lots of factions, lots of matchups have that energy, right? Where it's just a slight mistake and then the game's over. But with Huns, you know, if there's a slight mistake, everything's dead. And so, that was cool. Good game. And we ended up winning. You ended up winning against me. And then Tristan ended up winning. Our fucking German mercenary playing for you guys ended up winning into overwhelmingly winning into our Crusader player. Yeah. And thank God Mirko took the victory in Vikings, and the Persians ended up winning over the Macedonians.
Yeah. Our Macedonian player was a little salty how bad he got beat. It's like, this is bullshit. Fuck this game. I'm never playing Ancients again.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. I mean, I told him, like, Persians are good. Simon is really good. It's just how it is.
Yeah. And after turn four, after game four, it was looking very close, actually, because in, I think, Poland Red and England were on the second table. And they also had two wins on each side, or maybe two wins, a draw and a loss. So that was very close. And then Germany Black into Friends 1 was also exactly two wins, two losses, no overwhelming stuff. And the same was true for Germany Gold into Belgium and Hungary into Portugal. The teams were evenly matched now, and that was super cool to see that the Swiss system works perfectly as it should.
Yeah, and it's also good that there was nobody who had like beat up the others so hard that, like, I mean, lots of teams were playing for the gold in the end, right?
Yeah, but basically like six teams were playing for gold.
Yeah, and that's really good to see that there's no one who is like the Saga Jerkoffs or the fucking Ivan Drago of Saga was just like taking steroids and shit, beating everyone else. It was pretty even, and that's made it fun. And I think after we won against you guys, we thought like, holy shit, we didn't expect this to happen. We didn't expect to get this far. And now we can, we started to gain a lot of confidence in ourselves, which was, you know, after hubris comes nemesis. Let's say that. Should we move on to the next?
Sure, go ahead.
So this is the grand finale where everything goes down.
Yeah.
So we got to play Poland, Poland Red, I think. So that is Jan with his Republican Romans. He played into Alexander with his Macedonians in one of the bridge scenarios. We had Frederick playing, I can't remember, I think it was Clash of Warlords against their Normans. And this is the first time Frederick was playing against the Angry Monks. The Norman player had Angry Monks. So it was just like, yeah, but what should I do? I was like, damn, I'm fucked in the brain after the team's game. I need to rest. He was like, yeah, but how does this work? And he figured it out eventually. Like, you attack them in their turn when there's lots of dice out. So that was really good. And then I got to play the pick player you played. And Tristan got to play the Militus Christi. We came in this, I thought like, okay, I'm playing Picts in ambush. I'm going to ride around and beat him up. I have my levy to take one of the wagons. He put three pieces of terrain in his side, no terrain in my side, which I thought was, okay, this is good for me, starting off strong. And basically went a bit down, back and forth. My opponent was quite playing very defensively. He was not taking any chances. Was using his big units of warriors to attack the wagons, which he could do with his depict abilities. When there's like terrain nearby, they can charge far, move far. And I thought, okay, this game is basically going to be a draw. I have to lure him out. I have to give him a bait. So I charged one of my warrior units into his levy in terrain and went like, okay, fuck it, let's go. I have other guys nearby to counterattack with. And but that combat didn't go so good. I only killed a few. He killed nothing, but my unit was exhausted. I was like, this is fine. I still have some abilities left. He took that warrior unit out, and when I was going to counterattack, I did not have the right stuff to do it. So I still charged into his big warrior unit, hit them with like 25 attacks or something, but he saved most of it. I think I killed three. And now two of my units were exposed, which was bad. And yeah, he played very methodically, very safely, and he beat me up. And finally, my luck in the tournament was not where it was. I think he had a charge against seven of my warriors with his hurt guard. I failed. I hit him on force, fail everything. He wipes me out. Then he shoots twice. And then I was like, damn, just lost four saga dice in one turn. And so that he won it. He played better than me. He played safely. So that's credits to him. And the other games, Frederick won against the Normans. He had figured out how to beat them up, basically. he put down lots of forests. So that meant he could like jump his levy around, shoot with their strong shooting attack. Crash the Galgadil into the monks, take out the monks when the other opponent had lots of dice on the board, so he couldn't like use it so much. And yeah, it was a big victory. I don't think it was outstanding, but still pretty good. But in Crusades, Tristan drew the Militus Christi player, which it felt like they were really, because that game was over quickly and they felt like happy for it. And of course, Jan beat our.
Of course, you say.
You beat the our Alexander player.
Yeah.
It was close there. There were some saves with the war. That was one of the bridge scenarios we had to get over with your warlord. And I think the warlord exhausted did like five saves. The Roman warlord did like five saves or something. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, but of course, I mean, that's how Saga works. So they got two victories, one draw. And one loss, so they won the matchup, and they were quite happy, and I feel like we were a bit, not assholes, but we weren't, like, happy for them, as we should have been, like, we would have, I wish I was more, like, not as disappointed as I was, so I could, like, congratulate them properly, and, because they played well, they took it seriously, what do we say, Polska Guru.
I hope you can keep that in. All right. The Team Germany Red, the last match was into the British guys. It was so much fun to play into Richard, my opponent in the Age of Invasions. He played Picts and we played Ambush. And I loved that game because it was very deadly and tons of stuff happened, and he kept attacking wagons without anything happening. I kept attacking wagons without anything happening, and then we ended up fighting each other with everything happening and everything dying all at once. And in the end, it was all the wagons had survived, but one that he took out, and then I had taken the objective from him in like round three, and he took it from me again in round four, and I took it again from him in like round four again. It was just lots of back and forth, and then in the end, it was basically five of his warriors, not a whole lot on his board, just like two defensive abilities, I think, and like four attacks of mine to kill those five warriors, and or maybe like five attacks of mine, and I shot off two or three of those, so that two were remaining, and I had two or three charges left to clear his board and kill these two guys that were exhausted and everything, and I ended up not doing it. With all of that, and then even the Huns shooting after fighting could not take out the last remaining warrior, and it was brutal to see that last remaining warrior hold on to the objective and not die when he should have. And so I ended up losing that game by like 5 points or by 10 points, maybe. I can't really remember, but because of the big swing that the objective would have been, right? 6 points for him instead of 6 points for me. That's a 12-point difference that I couldn't really, really make up with the rest of the stuff that was happening. Even though his wallet died and like his warrant was gone, it was just that big amount of points was just too much. And so Richard took that from me, that win. And so that was crazy. That was crazy to me. I thought that was such a like I think after turn 3 or 4 I said to Mirko, like, yeah, I think I'll draw. Maybe I can win, but I won't. I'm sure I won't lose this. And then I ended up losing it. And Richard was such a good sport about it. Like, we had so much fun in it, and it was it was great. And my other players, my teammates, I think we ended up having two victories, a draw, and my loss. And I think Timo drew. Or maybe Mirko, I can't remember that. All of that is in a big cloud that I can't remember anymore, because I was so embarrassed to lose that game after saying to Mirko, like, yeah, don't worry, I won't lose it. And we ended up taking 15 points out of that, and England took 10 points out of that. And so we were like, damn, does that mean that we finished before you guys did? And so we thought, damn, does that mean the Swedes take it from us now? And then we saw that the Polish were actually beating you up somewhat okay. And then we were like, so relieved that the Swedes didn't get that many points, and we ended up having a chance at the title. And I mean, yeah, that is what happened. The top three teams ended up being third place for the Swedes, and then second place for the Germany black team, and the first place for my team, super proud, Germany red, took.
Congratulations, Tim. Well played.
Thank you. I mean, my teammates played super well. So
yeah, yeah, but you selected them, right?
Yeah. So yeah, that was, I was super proud to have been picked, in the German Grand Melee the year before, like, no, it was in March or something, to be the Team Germany organizing person. And it ended up, we ended up bringing three German teams and some mercenaries into the other nations. And I was super proud all of that worked out. And people gave me their trust, and I loved every minute of it. And now actually Team Germany took the first and second place. Like, holy moly, that was insane. Super happy.
Yeah, it was good. We were discussing like our placement. We thought like if we end up fourth place, there's gonna be lots of fighting in the 8-hour car drive up. Because there were some incidents on the way down. You guys, I'll tell you later after the podcast. So yeah, we were like, fuck, damn. But you know, we got through. Even so, I think Poland Red just got 1 point or 2 points under us.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I was really happy that we could recruit Tristan. He's such a good player in his niche. We're so happy for that. So now we think that we are actually good at Saga in Sweden. But and also that the guys came through, that my team came through. There was lots of, we had lots of ups and downs on the way up, but we finally... Some of them practiced really, really hard and took this seriously, which is great, because I don't think we could of course always practice more, but still proud of them that they took it seriously and they practiced. And yeah, because lots of the guys either work like many hours or have two kids, you know, it's not easy to get games of Saga in practice. And also it's a bit grueling to just play the same scenarios over and over again.
Yeah, that's also true for, like, I think many players. I talked about it with my friends here. Like the average age, I think, was like 40 maybe or something, maybe a little bit older even. And I think, like, it just means that lots of dads or lots of people that actually have tons of stuff going on in their life love this game and make their way over to Germany to play in that World Cup. And that was so cool to see, and I would love to read out the whole table of nations and their points at the end of game 5 real quick, because so from bottom to top, it's Portugal with 44 points, it's France 2 with 49 points, Belgium 1 with 49 points, but more on the second scoring, Italia Longobarda, I think those were the The more experienced guys, the older guys, with 52 points, and then Belgium too with 59 points, Austria with 59 points, with one of our German mercenaries in there, and then Germany gold with 61 points, France won with 61 points. To be honest, I thought France won was like I didn't think they ended up having bad luck in many situations. I expected them to be like the one of the top nations or top teams, and then after that comes Italia, Sabata, the guys with the incredibly cool shirts and the funny opinions about tiramisu with 62
you
points.
Correct
opinion. sure. Yeah. Then 60. Then Hungary with 63 points and a German mercenary in there. Then England with 68 points, and now it gets super tight. Poland white with 69 points, nice. Poland red with 73 points, so that's fourth. Sweden with 74 points, and then Germany black with 76 points. So one draw more for any of these.
I feel that like I just could have played a little better in my last game. Could have managed, but
yeah. Germany black with 76, as I said, and then Germany red with 84. So I think we were quite safe in the end, but it didn't feel like it. And it was so much fun. You missed out so badly, JP. I would have loved a Dutch team there.
Yeah, I think we're gonna during the weekend. I was definitely having some regrets.
Yeah,
but I'm gonna try and get something together for next year.
Hell yeah, super cool.
So according to the tradition, the next World Cup will be organized by the first non-German team in the top, and that will be Sweden.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's so cool.
So we haven't started the serious discussions yet, but our aim is to carry it out.
That's so cool. I mean, I'm pretty sure we're happy to bring like all the German terrain and like 15 different cars, because I think you will need it. Like, you can get the location and everything.
Start
but...
building.
Yeah. Otherwise, yeah. It's the summer will be won't be any summer vacation for me. We're not going to travel.
Figure that stuff out,
in a basement. You can sit in a basement, build terrain. We'll think of it. And did you guys expect Sweden to get so high?
Honestly, I expected no. I expected France or Poland. Seeing who they showed up, I expected France or Poland to take like the top three. Mm-hmm.
Did you think that even after you played us?
No, I mean, obviously not. You guys were doing incredibly well. And you had Tristan. Like, that's like
he's
cheating.
So good.
He's so good, man. Like, his Spanish are just, like, he just knows exactly what he's doing. He doesn't do mistakes. Yeah. And so he doesn't make mistakes. Yeah, so.
No, even if he's playing, like, a subpar board, he knows. I was so happy that he could play for us. I asked him, like, a month before, and he was like, I had to check with my wife. And then he was like, sure. And that was really good. But the other guys also, like Frederick was doing really well with his Scots. I think he was the only Scots player, which is cool. Macedonians, they were doing okay. I think Alexander could have had a little bit more practice, and he talked about the successors being like the stronger board. But it was good that, because I didn't want to play Ancients, I don't like it. So it was good that he like, don't worry, I'll take it, I'll do my best. And he did his best, and it carried us to the top. So,
super cool. Yeah. Overall, amazing experience. Absolutely looking forward to next year and driving to Sweden and freezing my ass off there to enjoy a good game of Saga indoors.
Just be careful when you drive around Denmark.
Yeah, I'm sure there's no one here has had any prior experiences with driving around Denmark and touching other people's cars. All right, JP, do you wanna? Do you have more important questions as you always do, or are you happy?
I just want to get a little bit of a vibe check at the end. How are we feeling about Saga? How is this the winning formula, or are there going to be changes in how it gets set up, scenarios, everything else, or is it too soon to say?
I think it's perfectly fine to ask that question, because there is one or two things that should be improved, and we as the the organizing nation are well aware. Like, for example, we had four scenarios per round, and that meant that the team that gets to pick the first scenario basically decides that, and then the other team gets to pick the second one. But that also means that the third pick decides for pick three and four, you know, because you pick which scenario goes to the third player, and then the fourth one is the only one left for the last nation. So in that situation, for picking scenarios, that ended up being one team. The one that's ranked lower gets to pick three of the matchups, and then the team that's ranked higher gets to pick one. And that wasn't the goal of the whole thing. So for the next time, it's probably going to be five possible scenarios per round, where that means that the second team still has a choice for the last matchup to decide, okay, we're going to play that or that. And I think that's one of the only things that that immediately were clear that they should be better next time, and the rest was super good.
Yeah. And I also feel, go ahead.
And the vibe there, right? That's a word my generation uses and I love to use. The vibe there was just insanely cool. Of course, there were some players that took everything very seriously. As I mean, I understand that it's the World Cup, right? And also, I think 90% of players were there to have a great time and actually did have a great time. I'm pretty sure everyone had a great time. Maybe not my Germany gold captain Flo. I think he ended up crying the whole weekend because he didn't win a single game. But everyone else had a great time, so that's good.
Get out of the forest, Florian. Come on, man.
Yeah.
All right.
No, it was great. There's been some discussion, like on the Discord, like of power levels between factions and so on. But I don't think that's the. I think the only one that stands out is maybe the Persian, that might be a little slight tweak. But there were lots of people brought Picts, and I don't feel that Picts were overwhelmingly good, because I beat like two of them, lost to one. So
I mean, yes, they're very good in the scenarios they play, but I think that's the great thing about the whole setup, right? That you can, as the less high ranked team, you can pick for the scenario, you can pick a scenario for the Picts that they will struggle with. Like, they have very clear strong points and very clear weaknesses. I think that makes a good faction. And of course, I say that as a Hun player who has the Hun army has very clear weaknesses, and I think that's fine.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they should be changing up too much. And also, the Age of Vikings has the most faction represented, so that speaks a little bit about that it's maybe the one where more factions have a chance. I think 10 factions were represented in the Viking Age, and
yeah, that's cool.
It was less in the others. But I think the Persians could use a small tweak. Nothing big. I'm building a Persian army, so don't fuck this up for me. but anyway, it was good talking.
Yeah.
All right, this is a mega episode of the activation phase. It's now officially over. Thank you for listening. Thanks, Hamza, for joining. And catch everyone later.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.